Welcome. Welcome to Recipe for Peace Now. I'm your host, Sue Beller, and this is the show where we find practical, real-life solutions to difficulties bringing people together for a common goal, a common good. We will discuss listener emails, answer common questions, and at the end of the show, we will have two delicious potluck recipes made for sharing with your new community of, well, if not exactly friends, at least willing participants. If you would like to send in a question or favorite recipe, please email us at recipeforpeacenow@gmail.com. Or visit our website, www.recipeforpeacenow.com. Also, if you would like to hear prior shows, they are archived on that website, recipeforpeacenow.com. Thanks. Now let's get started. This time we're going to be talking about being effective. And of course, that's what we want to be as leaders. We want to really get somewhere. We want to have a successful outcome. We want to be effective as leaders, right? Right. Mm-hmm. Well, it's a good point, and as people too. Good point too. Yes, whatever we do, we want it to be really effective. We want it to really, really count for something, really, really do something, right? Yeah. Mm-hmm. So let's start. Yes, I know a lot of you are already answering. Thank you. Already answering the basic question that we're going to ask, so that we can decide what we're going to talk about, because this is an unscripted show. We take it wherever you'd like it to go. So the question is going to be, what do we, as leaders, need to be effective? Yeah, what should we do? How should we be effective? How should we know how to make this happen, right? Huh? What do we as leaders need to be effective? What do we need to be effective? What do we need to be effective to get done, right? Mm-hmm. I think that the first thing we're going to talk about, yes, is we need to be effective in defining success. Yes. How are we going to know where we're going if we don't know what it is that we want? We need to define success. Mm-hmm. A lot of folk are talking about being effective, like in the process, in making time limitations and other procedural decisions. Very important, because that is what makes it go smoothly, right? Yeah. So let's be effective in our time limits, in our process itself, right? Mm-hmm. How about being effective as leaders in encouraging working relationships, right? At the beginning of the show, I said, if not exactly friends, didn't I? Well, yeah, you're not, your job, so to speak, is not to make everybody friends. Mm-mm. Not even to get people to release their bigotries. No. Our job is to make working relationships so we can get this done, right? And one of the things that I always find surprising, that my participants find surprising, because it seems obvious, right? No. Is that the faster and the more efficiently we get this done, the more effective we are, well, the faster we don't have to deal with each other again, right? Until the next time. Yeah, this is a surprise to people. I don't know why this is a surprise to people, but it really is. And I come right out and say it. Because sometimes you've got a group that is really predisposed to not like each other or work well together. So we're going to work well together for this specific issues at this specific time. We're going to have a working relationship. We don't have to like each other. We just have to work well together and get to our successful outcome. Right? Right. Mm-hmm. I think the next thing we're going to be talking about is enthusiasm. I'm going to make that kind of a general idea of enthusiasm, right? Yeah. Of we're going to feel like we can do this. We're going to feel enthusiastic. Mm-hmm. Yes. And the leader has a great deal to do with the group enthusiasm. We'll talk about that when we get there. It's effective, how about, to create a convivial atmosphere, right? Something that everybody can work in, a convivial atmosphere. People feel kind of pleased, kind of happy. Mm-hmm. Let's give also clear instructions. That goes to process somewhat, but we're going to be talking about time limits first. Let's talk about instruction giving, because it's very important. We want our participants to do something. Well, what is it that we want them to do? And have we made our intent, have we made what needs to be done clear, right? Clear instructions. I know what I'm supposed to be doing, right? Mm-hmm. How about some expertise? Not only our own expertise is effective, but how about we know when we need to bring in an outside expert, which is a thing to know. We need assistance. We need someone to validate this, maybe, right? Mm-hmm. Somebody say, yeah, I think that seems right. Or, no, this is how it should be done, right? Yeah, we're going to know when to bring in an expert. And I think the last one we're going to talk about, which is going to encompass kind of all of them, is the idea of teamwork to reach a successful outcome, even if the people are very diverse, right? We're going to make teams. We might even make our whole group as a team. But a lot of times we also make smaller teams. You can call them committees, whatever it is you like, so that we can work together more effectively. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So let's start. Let's start about defining success. Yes, thank you. People are asking, who should we define success as leader? Let's think about that for a moment. Who defines success? Who decides what success looks like? Right? How do we know where it is that we're going? How do we know our goals? Right? Yeah. What's our common goal so that we can reach our common good? Right? How do we define success? Mm-hmm. Quite a few are saying that it's defined for you by your employer. I'm going to call whoever it is that brought us in our employer, even if he or she is not technically. A lot of times we're consultants and like that, but whoever it is that called us in, let's call them the employer, the person who is to whom we answer to, right? The person to whom we show the successful outcome. We're going to call him or her our employer. Mm-hmm. And sometimes it is true, yes. Mohammed says the employer sets the expectations that are understood beforehand and the specifics. Yes. What is it? Why am I being brought in? What is your goal? What do you want? If the answer is, I don't know, run. Because they won't know when they've got it. They won't know when they're satisfied. All right, run may be too strict, but you're going to have to get that idea through to them that they have to understand what it is that they want so that we can achieve it. We have to know what success looks like and the specifics of it. Yes, Liz and others are saying you have to know the goal they have in mind. The goal. What's our goal? What is it that we, when we are done, what do we want to happen, right? Yeah. What is it that we're aiming for? Mm-hmm. Pardon me, because that will define success. It will define what we're doing, for heaven's sakes. Yeah. And when you talk about to your employer, remember I'm calling everybody that general term, when you first start out and you're being brought in and you're deciding whether or not to take on this project, because it's a project, right? You have to decide if you're going to do it or not. When you're being brought in, one of the things when we talk about goals and we talk about expectations and like that is we have to determine our leadership parameters. What consequences can we announce, can we impose, if our participants refuse to cooperate? Hey, we got to know that, right? We want to determine not only the consequences of our actions when we have our successful outcome, and whether or not there's something that's kind of unexpected, but we also want to know the consequences of our leadership. We want to know what it is that we can do to, for example, enforce the civility rules. Now, the civility rules are impacting everything, of course. We'll talk about them a little more, maybe lower down the line, but let's talk about them now. The civility rules, I know most of you know this definition, but we have some new people too, which is fabulous. Everybody, welcome. If you want your prior shows, they're archived on the website, recipeforpeacenow.com. So, the civility rules. They basically say we will not be rude to one another. We will not be rude. Now, that seems easier said than done, right? Because there's always somebody who wants to be a bully, always somebody who wants to go past their turn, maybe even somebody who wants to derail the process because they don't want it to be successful, right? Yes. What are the consequences? Now, you can sell people the civility rules, and most reasonable people say that's a very fine thing, and they do them. But what if you've got somebody that won't? What consequences are to that kind of obnoxiousness? What are the consequences? We have to know that, and they have to know that, and those consequences are set by the people that bring us in. Our employer, so to speak, right? Will this person, the employer, back me up? Will they come and enforce the civility rules, right? Can I influence, well, okay, I deal corporate a lot. Can I influence your job, right? Can I, would being dismissed from the group be a really bad thing for you professionally? That's a good motivator, right? Yeah. So the civility rules are things that need to be because we need to have a civil discourse, right? Can't have bullies. Can't have people taking other people's turn. What's the consequence if you don't? Yes, of course. As leaders, to be effective, we always model the civility rules, yes, because we cannot ask people to do something that we ourselves do not do. How can we? We cannot ask people to do something that we ourselves do not do. How would that be a reasonable thing to do, right? No, we want to always model the civility rules. Never lose our temper, never yell, never have a bad day. Your group did not cause your bad day, and if they did, it's because you didn't have proper control. Defining success by the employer. Quite a few people are talking about good faith, right? Yes. You want to know that your employer and the people that they are assigning to your group, because a lot of times if you're corporate, you get assigned people to the group, oftentimes by level of employment. So they have something in common right away, but not very much, because they're quite diverse, but they're the same level, but oftentimes in different places in the world, never mind in different places in the company or in the United States. And you have to know that that's in good faith, that you haven't been set up to fail, so that we can define success and we can decide what it is that we're actually working towards and define good faith, right? What it is that we're really doing. Well, who else defines success? How about the group? How about we define success as a team effort, right? Yes. Sometimes we have to decide what a successful outcome will look like. It's one of our first orders of business because we have to know what we're working towards, right? So it's a team effort. Now, sometimes a group is very similar in idea, not necessarily similar in people, but really kind of all on the same page, and sometimes not. So you have to decide how we're going to define success. And yes, lots of people, Thomas and others, are talking about the fact that the definition changes and modifies. It does. The definition naturally changes and modifies as we go along because we find things out. We do research. We determine what the consequences of our actions will be. We find things out. And when we find things out, we go, didn't think about it that way. I think that is going to be important, right? Yeah. So we're going to find things out and determine what the definition is and how it's going to change, right? People are saying to write down a mission statement. I'm going to say it depends. It depends on the group. It depends on whether they really need the mission statement. I don't generally, it's not something that I do, unless I as leader make a leadership decision that it would help us to focus, help us to really understand what success looks like. I'm not adverse, but I don't think much of it as a first step always, because sometimes you don't need it, and sometimes writing it down seems to make it more difficult to modify. Yeah. If you do something very general, well, it's just general, right? If you do something very specific, then when things change, you're going to go, we need to modify this. And the people, no. Well, let's think about that for a moment. Yeah, so modification might be something that just happens, right? Because we need to, not just happens. I mean, we have to work on it. But sometimes the definition of success changes. And if you've written it down, it's a little harder. Success is effectively defined maybe by participant needs. What do we all need? What do we want from this group? What's our best outcome? What would be the best thing that we could think of, right? Yeah, what do we want? Interesting. And it's very interesting to go around and figure that out because it also makes the participants really think about their goals. Because sometimes people come in, they've got kind of a vague idea. they want something to change. But they're not exactly sure in what way. It's kind of a generalized notion. Let's try to make it more specific. Let's try to really think about it. Let's try to really envision what it is that we're going to take away from this, right? Yeah. How else should success be defined? How about by outside considerations? Sometimes that happens. Success, we have an idea, and we go in, and it's either we've done it partially through the group, partially through an idea that the employer has given us, right, the leader. And we've got this idea. We've got this notion. We're working on it. And then something happens in the outside world that we didn't do and is beyond our control but impacts our decisions and what we're going to do. It impacts our actions, right? Yeah, sometimes that happens. And it is, what kind? Well, a lot of folks are talking about funding. we lose some sort of funding. We can't go as far as we thought we were going to go. We'd like to, and we will eventually, but we've maybe had to narrow the definition of success. Make it a little less, well, maybe more steps to it than we thought, right? Mm-hmm. Oh, the good point. We could have gotten more funding and be able to go faster than we thought. That would be fabulous, right? Yeah, maybe we've gotten more. Maybe we have really, really been successful in our fundraising efforts, right? Yeah, that would be good. What else is an outside influence that impacts our effectiveness? Well, how about if we have other similar groups, right? There's other groups out there trying to do the same thing. The United States is, of course, quite big, and sometimes other people in other states have the same idea. Well, the internet exists, so does Skype. Let's get together. Let's see if we can work together. There's power in numbers. There's power in combining resources. But do you see the word power? You have to remember there's also power in being leader. And people do not want to give up their leadership position. And you have to remember that. That's not unreasonable. People don't want to give up their leadership position. They don't want to have somebody else be in charge when they were in charge and they liked it and it was good, right? Yeah. Let's remember that we want to understand that people want to maintain their position. And not just give up to us, right? Yeah. So, there may be other similar groups, but let's not assimilate them. Let's have their ideas and our ideas join together for the common good. Mm-hmm. How about an outside circumstance affecting our effectiveness? That is the fact that there's now opposition groups, right? When we started out, maybe there weren't, but we're being highly effective. And other people are not all that keen on it, right? Yeah, there's opposition now, which is kind of a compliment because it means that we're getting somewhere. But it also means that we need to understand. We might need to reach out, but it affects our effectiveness, right? Yes, there might be a media campaign. And we need to effectively counter it. We need to launch our own media campaign, right? And one of the best things that I think that you do is to appoint a spokesperson, right? And not have everybody talking for the group. It muddles the message. You need to have a spokesperson. You need someone to say, look, this is important, and this is how we're going to do it. This is what we're going to do as a process. This is what we are doing. This is our position, right? Yeah. Mm-hmm. Also, outside influences, outside considerations on defining success would be the consequences of our actions. Sometimes we start out and we have an idea of what needs to be done. But we don't fully understand the consequences if we do it. There's somebody who really likes it the way it is, and there's a reason for that. And we have to think about those consequences on others, right? Yeah. What are the consequences of our actions? Mm-hmm. I'm defining success. A lot of people are voting for the leader to define success. Maybe. As we become more experienced in the field, we get a leadership style. It has kind of to do with your personality in a way, but it's even more than that. It's how you tend to lead. Now, I tend to lead through consensus building. right? I like people to get together and get buy-in. Yeah, then they all work together, and when our time together is over, and we need to actually do whatever it is that we've decided, right? And I'm not really necessarily there anymore. I get called in as a consultant sometimes, but the group itself has decided what to do, and we now need to go out and do it. If you lead by consensus and everyone feels that they have had their fair say and we've compromised and this is good, then you get people who will really work, who will really do it in real life and not just balk because it wasn't their idea, right? Yeah. Mm-hmm. But, yes, thank you. A lot of you lead more determined leader, right? More leadership, less consensus building, more telling people what we're going to do. Nothing wrong with that. That is not only personal style, that is a cultural style that would go with your group, because you have to think about that. Sometimes you see a group that's got an actual cultural expectation of what a leader does. A cultural expectation, maybe an ethnic type cultural expectation, but mainly what I see is corporate culture. This is how we do it. Corporate culture. This is how we do it. Well, let's think about that. That means that we need to really think about our leadership style and whether or not we can accommodate that sentence. The answer is yes, within certain parameters, and also has to do with your experience, and whether or not you can kind of modify what you generally do. I can, but if it's going to be really, really, I'm telling you what to do now, let's do it, that's the end of it. I can do it, I don't mind. But I like to have some expert validation for that. I suppose that's true. People are saying it covers my, posterior, right? I suppose that's really true. If I am requested to just decide and tell us what to do and we'll do it, And the group really doesn't want to do consensus building and like that, they just want somebody to say yes or no, I will actually bring in an expert and we will talk about the various expert opinions before I decide, right? And I do kind of, all right, I guess I am a consensus builder and I never just decide. Here's 3 minutes. Here, do this. Because I need them to really do it and to really buy in, really, really have enthusiasm. And how enthusiastic would you feel about that, right? So I get expert validation. I like to call in an expert and ask what they think we should do. In fact, more than one expert is always a good sentence, right? I think it's very effective. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Our next one is process area, because we want our process to be effective also, right? And that's setting of time limits, right? I think even at the beginning, now you'll decide as you go along, but at the beginning, you need to set some time limits for discussion so that everybody gets their turn, right? I actually literally set a time limit. And then I go around the room, so to speak, even if we're not actually together, but we're Skyping or whatever. And I like to hear from everybody. Because there are certain people, I know we're not one of them. I actually have to remember when I'm in a group to be silent and to listen. And to really not take over the group accidentally. Because people will let me. They really will. They'll go, oh, Sue knows what she's doing. Let her do it. It's very strange. Even when I'm not the leader, people kind of let me take over the group. And you don't want to, especially as the leader. You want everybody to have their turn, everybody to have their say, everybody to voice an opinion. So I am the model of civility, right? I'm the leader. And we're going to have an efficient process where we really take turns and we can get everybody's opinion and really talk about it, right? I do time, people are asking. Okay, some groups after the first session or so, you don't really need to. They might even be smaller groups, which makes a difference. Very big ones become a little unwieldy in the efficiency of process. You have to be carefuler. I actually time with a kitchen timer. I know that's kind of strange in today's day and age, and people really like the timer on their smartphone. I do it because it's in the room. It goes tick, 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 ding, after whatever the allotted time is. And everybody can see that they got their fair share. And don't think secretly, oh, I didn't have as much time as he did. I didn't get all my points in. I got cheated, right? The leader doesn't like me. No, we like everyone, at least on paper. But it's you need to do something that shows everyone that they've had, in my opinion, that they've had their fair amount, that they've had the same amount as everybody else. I think that's very, very important. It is human nature to feel that you didn't quite get yours. Yeah, didn't quite get mine. Now I feel sad. I feel ripped off. This is true, too. Suki and others are saying that if you have a very efficient process, it gives confidence to the group. They feel like they're really in a group that's being led properly, that's really going to get somewhere, that's not just kind of lost, right? There's something to be said for that. To not feel that you're not quite, you want to feel that you really, really gotten something good here. This is really a good idea. This is an efficient group. This leader knows really what he or she is doing, right? Well, don't you like to be in groups like that? Yeah. I've seen groups kind of fall apart. In fact, I've taken them over, come to think of it, where the leader lacks confidence. Okay, I'm going to revise that sentence. Where the leader lacks the appearance of confidence. Do you have to always know what you're doing? Well, maybe not so much. Do you have to seem like you know what you're doing because you're the leader? And we're going to discuss this, and then we're going to come to a decision. Yep. You need to exude confidence. We know where we're going. We know what we're doing. We're going to get there. Yep. We understand how to work together. Yeah. It gives everybody a good feeling. People are asking about having interns for the efficiency of the process. Yes and no. We have interns at Recipe for Peace now, but we are kind of cranky, and we're picky about them. The reason being is that we want adults, right, with some experience. We do not take anybody below an MBA, so they've had quite a bit of education, which means they're kind of focused. And we do ask that they be allowed to stay for a year, for more than one term, because it takes a little while to train an intern, right? It takes a little while to get used to each other. It takes some supervision. That takes some time. And we want to be able to do all that in enough time so that they're of value to us once they learn it. And not just leave right after they've gotten all their training, right? Yeah. I have a bias about this. I admit this. I think interns are swell. But I do think you need, if you're going to be big enough, right, and it's big enough issues and something that needs to be kept track of, I do think you need a paid assistant, a well-paid assistant if possible, to really keep track of what everybody's doing and to keep track of that which gets disseminated and to keep track of questions, the whole bit, right? Because you're busy. You as leader are busy doing leadership things. You need someone to do the process things. That enough. It's very important that you be allowed to lead, right? Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so there's nothing wrong with interns, but they have kind of a limited ability, and they're short-term. I like to have somebody who's paid who's long-term. Mm-hmm. Our next topic is forming working relationships. Yes, working relationships. Yes, quite a few of you, thank you all for listening. Thank you all for being here. Hussein and others are saying that in order to have a working relationship, you need to create empathy. Empathy. And remember, empathy is not necessarily agreement. Empathy is understanding. Empathy is not necessarily agreement. Empathy is understanding. I understand why you think that. I understand your position. You understand me. Let's modify and work towards the middle and have consensus, right? That's the act of negotiation. The act of negotiation is an act of compromise, really. It's just that everybody compromises some and everybody wins some. And so they all feel, well, that was fair. That was a good experience, which is what we're aiming for, right? Yeah, that was fair. That was a good experience. Let's think about that. Let's do it, right? Yeah. In order to have empathy, yes, thank you. Quite a few of you are trotting out the way to get empathy, and I'm so pleased because it means you've listened before. Prior shows are archived on the website, recipeforpeacenow.com, right? And in order to have empathy and to gain it, we have to know something about each other. And we're going to break out the 5W questions because they'll let us know how come is the key to it. The 5W questions are who, what, where, when, and why. Who, what, where, when, and why. It'll get to the bottom of it. Do we ask them all at the same time? Not necessarily. Do we ask them all in that order? Not necessarily either. Do we ask them in front of everybody? Maybe not. You have to make a leadership effectiveness judgment call, right? Right. Who, what, where, when, and why? Who told you that? What did they say? Where? Where did you hear it? When did you hear it? And why do you have that reaction? All of this said in a very polite and more full-sentenced than what I have just done. But what you're trying to do is get to the bottom of how come this perfectly reasonable human being has this opinion and is insisting on it. And how come this perfectly reasonable human being has a completely different opinion and is insisting on it? Right? Yeah. Let's find out how come. The next topic we were going to talk about is enthusiasm. Yes. Enthusiasm. We feel really, really like we're going to get someplace. Yes, we as leaders, in order to be effective leaders, in order to be effectively enthusiastic, need to model enthusiasm. Model enthusiasm. If I'm not enthusiastic and I'm acting like, oh my God, this is such a lemon group, we're going to fail for sure. Well, what do you expect of our participants, for heaven's sake? Right? Yeah, you can't expect them to have enthusiasm for something that you don't feel enthusiastic about. How can you? How can you reasonably have an expectation like that? Right? Yes, we're going to model enthusiasm. Mm-hmm. Excuse me. Took a little sip of water there. We need to be able to say, oh, look, we're going to do this. This is great. We're going to succeed. Let's get our definition of success down, right? Yes. We're going to really go forward. Wouldn't that be fabulous? Mm-hmm. In order to have enthusiasm, you also must carefully select your teams, right? Yes, thank you. Eugene and others are talking about the fact that in the workbook, the teams are kind of selected randomly. But that's an exercise. That's not real life. I'm not big on random anything in real life. That's just to get us. We actually revolve every hour. We don't keep our same team. So we get the chance to talk to everybody and to think about them and to really understand how to negotiate with different types of people. You would never do that in real life. In fact, I announced this. Yes, a lot of you have seen the seminars and workshops. You need to carefully select your team on abilities, personalities, right? Sometimes you're breaking up cliques. You have to know that. You have to know that that's what you're doing, right? Yes. On expertise, because they're going to go out and research. They're going to go out and know things. And then they're going to report back to the whole, because the team is a whole. It's everybody. And then you've got subcommittees. You've got smaller teams that are tasked with a specific thing that they need to do and bring back to the whole group. Yes. That is very, very important and very different, right? Mm-hmm. This is a good point, too. A lot of folks, excuse me, Padme and others are talking about creating a timeline to see progress. Yes, if you think it's helpful. And you've got something that's very long term, because you need to make a timeline, right? Because it is true, it is human nature to forget how far we've come. It's going for quite a while, this process, this effective process to get to our successful outcome. And people go, oh, we're not getting anywhere. We're just talking about it. We're not getting anywhere. So you need to be reminded that, yes, you are. You are really getting somewhere. It just seems like not. But you really are. You're really getting somewhere. You're really being effective, right? Yes. Mm-hmm. And that's very important, to understand that you really are going forward, right? Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yes. Thank you. Suki and others are saying you need to celebrate every successful step. Celebrate every successful step. Because people remember that. They remember there was cake. I don't know, they remember that there was a celebration. We were getting there. We're another hurdle overcome. Another milestone, another task. We're going forward. Wow, this is fabulous. It'll keep up our enthusiasm because this is fabulous, right? Yay! We're going forward. Mm-hmm. And that also, a convivial atmosphere, which is our next topic, helps with that too. Because to celebrate and to know that you're going forward creates a convivial atmosphere. We look forward to meeting again. We look forward to working together. We look forward to getting this done. Yeah, this is fabulous. Mm-hmm. This is true, too. Yes, the civility rules, of course, permeate everything, right? And we've got the power over the consequences that we talked about, right? even if the group looks like they're going to be civil, which is very convivial, and they're kind of similar, and like that, they are human beings, and I announce the civility rules. So nobody's surprised, right? I do. I announce them straight out when we first meet. And then you must remember that the civility rules not only must be modeled by you, the leader, but they need to be enforced immediately, consistently, and fairly. Immediately, consistently, and fairly. You can't wait till things go uncivil and then say, oh, you know those civility rules? We're going to enforce them now. Uh-uh, it's not going to work. You need to do it as you go along and not let things get out of hand. Very, very important. That is one of your main jobs, is to create a civil and convivial atmosphere so that we can get this done, so that we can work together with people we really didn't think we ever would work together with. We need to really concentrate on that, right? Yeah. Convivial atmosphere is also physical comfort. This is true. George and others are saying that to create a convivial atmosphere is not only civility, but it's also physical comfort. Yeah, it's fun to go. It's a good location, right? We've agreed on it. Oh, it's climate controlled, or maybe it's outdoors if we have that kind of climate. There's always a potluck, which is fun. It's like going to a party, right? And we get a lot done because we're all prepared. Everything's been, all the handouts and stuff has been given beforehand. So we really get a lot done. Yeah. And it's really a good thing, right? Yeah, really a good thing. And so that is part of convivial, a part of enthusiasm, a part of civility. These things all interconnect because makes a whole of a group that you want to be in and that you want to lead. Yes, but look at it from the participant standpoint. Would I like to be in this group? Is it a treat to really be able to get something done in such a pleasant way? Yes. It is. Yay! And speaking of all the things that come together in one of these groups, how about clear instructions? I want to know what it is I'm supposed to do. I need you to really make it clear to me. Sometimes, you ever been invited to something, for example, and you have to pull it out step by step? What, are we having a seated meal? Is there an ask? You know, what do people wear? It's all kind of like, well, just tell me. Tell me how it is. Give me clear instructions. And I will tell you if I can do them or if I understand them. Yeah, because a lot of times people are participants. Don't like to admit that they don't understand. Because it seems like everybody else does. Well, what's the matter with you? How come you're so dumb? The answer is no. Nobody is dumb. First of all, you need to be open to questions so that you can see if your instructions were clear or not. This is an interesting point. Hussein says you need to repeat your instructions at least 3 times in different ways so that they hear it. Repeat the instructions at least 3 times in different ways. I actually personally like instructions that are also written down so that I know what I'm doing. And I can recheck the instructions to see that I'm on track. I really do. I like my instructions to be written down in addition to oral and to being able to ask questions. But I want to see them. I want to post them on the top of my computer so that I can really visualize what I need to do. Yes, there does need to be follow-up. You need to follow up to be certain that everybody's on the correct path. Who does the follow-up? good point. Ah, we've got votes for team leader. Most of the time. That's why you made a team leader, so that he or she could kind of keep track, right? Know what's happening. Really be able to say, oh, this is what we're doing now, right? Yeah. And that's very important, to be able to have somebody really be in charge and keeping track. Because especially if there's some time lapse between the meetings of the whole group, sometimes people do indeed kind of wander off in a different direction than you thought they were going to go. And that means that what they find out, what they research, is not necessarily going to be real valuable, right? Yeah, so you need to keep track. Let's talk about effective expertise. Sometimes, in order to be effective, we need to call in an expert. We do. We need to send for somebody, right? Yes, that is the tricky part. George says the tricky part is to know when you need the expert advice. That is the tricky part, because you have to think about your expertise, your participant expertise, how far we've come, and what we need to know, because the expert needs clear instructions too, or they won't be effective. Yes, you need to know, you need to know what kind of expert to call in, who is an expert in this specific thing, and you need to be able to say, this is what we need, can you help us? Yeah. Yes, this is actually one of the main ways to do it. Martha and others are saying that you bring in an expert when you need a third-party impasse breaker. Impasse breaker. You need somebody who is really going to make the decision, to make the decision easier so we can go on. Right? We've kind of hit an impasse. We're circling. We're not kind of going forward. Let's bring in an expert. Let's bring in more than one expert to tell us their reasoned opinion and to really help us make the decision and go forward. Sometimes that happens. You've got a decision that needs to be made, and we're having some difficulty doing it. We're having some difficulty making it go forward, right? It's not a sin, but we need to really, really work on it, really make it so that we're going to be effective and to really go forward. Yes, people asking about who to bring is an expert. My preference is somebody who's done it in real life. I like somebody who's really out in the field, who really knows something, who really has experience about the consequences. Yes, thank you. Ahmed and others are saying that a lot of times the expert is somebody who tried to get our successful outcome, but for one reason or another was not successful. And they're interesting to talk to because they're still interested in having it be a success. And they'll tell us, I don't like to use the word wrong, but they'll tell us what went wrong, right? They'll give us an idea what we should do. What we should do now so that we don't have the same not-so-hotsy-totsy result that they had. When you're dealing with the media, sometimes you have an expert who has a lot of fancy credentials because it's impressive to the media. So that is a consideration also. Someone the media really can deal with, really likes, and really gets, sound bites from. Do you understand? Yeah. So sometimes your expert is chosen by what you need to do. It's what the key to this is. Chosen by the fact that they need to be vetted in some way. Sometimes employers like to see lots of credentials. It makes them happy. It makes them feel that the expert is really an expert, right? So although you might call in some experts who are really in the trenches and really know something, you might also need an expert to talk outside of your group to others and tell why they are certain that this is the truth, right? Yeah, it is a kind of a dance, a fine line that needs to be accepted. Mm-hmm. Yeah. The last one is going to be teamwork and committee effectiveness. Oh, phooey, we're not going to make the recipes again. I will try to do it next time. Oftentimes, I confess this, we do not, because we have such fabulous conversations, and we're going to run out of time. So teamwork, committee effectiveness. The key to the instructions and to your teams and your committees, if they're going to go research something, they're going to go think on something, they need to research all sides, to know all sides, not just the side that appeals to them. Yeah. Not just the side that is, oh, this is what we think, so it must be right. Let's actually look around and see if we need, well, to revise, to really think, to really decide, oh, that's not quite it, right? Yeah. Let's really consider what it is that we need to know. Let's really consider what it is that we are sending to the entire group, right? Mm-hmm. Quite a few of you are talking about role play, R-O-L-E. Yes, thank you, Thomas and others. We do indeed do a lot of role playing during our workshops and seminars. This is true, especially the workshops. And yes, there's role-playing in the book. This is true, lots of it. I think it's good as an exercise. It's a quick way to gain empathy because you have to argue a different side, right? In real life, I am cautious about role-playing because you don't want to insult someone, to have them feel that they've been mocked in some way, right? Yeah, you don't want to be insulted and have your opinions kind of treated not as respectfully as you think they should be, perhaps, right? So that's why you need to choose carefully. I am cautious about role play. In real life, I think it's an excellent tool for a workshop and a seminar, but I'm cautious about it in actual use. So you have to think about that. That's in a leadership decision. The decision should be, will this advance us forward? Will it help us be effective? What's the purpose? You see, when I see kind of thing that could use some role play, I think, well, maybe this is our moment to call in an expert, right? Think about that one. Yeah, it's kind of a something you have to consider, right? Yeah. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you all for being here. We are out of time. Thank you for all of your fabulous discussion. Thank you for listening. Thank you for coming. If you want to find us, we're at recipeforpeacenow@gmail.com. The website, www.recipeforpeacenow.com. Prior shows, they are archived on that website. Thank you for coming. Thank you for all of your participation. Thank you for listening. And please do come again. Thanks. Bye-bye.